You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Because of rising gas prices and an increased consciousness over energy independence and reducing greenhouse gas emissions, more and more drivers are purchasing hybrid cars. Since last year, hybrid car sales in the United States have risen more than 41%. Joining me now for this week's Please Explain are Brad Berman, editor of HybridCars.com, and John Velker, an automotive journalist, and I'm very pleased to welcome them to the show. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you.
Brad, is the high cost of gas the main reason hybrid cars are becoming so popular?
Well, certainly with this most recent spike, it's gotten everyone's attention. I mean, how many times can we go to the pumps and get stung with those high prices before you start thinking there's got to be a better solution? But hybrids have grown because there are a whole list of reasons why people find them attractive. There are the economic issues, concerns over the environment. People just like new whiz-bang cool technology as well.
Well, as I said, there's been a huge increase in hybrid car purchases, but what percentage of the total car market do they represent?
Well, in 2007, it was just about 2.5% of the new car market, so it's still a niche. But last month, it grew past 3%, which the month before that it passed the 3% mark was May 2007, when, not coincidentally, we also had a spike in gas prices.
Are there enough cars to satisfy demand?
My opinion is no. I mean, the Toyota Prius, which is the most popular hybrid car out there, the reports I'm seeing is that they're flying off of dealership showrooms. We're starting to see a little bit of waiting list return, not as bad as it was a couple of years ago when the demand for hybrid cars surprised everybody, including Toyota. They've stepped up production, but by and large, there are just not enough hybrids out there to satisfy the demand.
John, how efficient are they? Are they more efficient for city driving or for continuous high-speed highway driving?
That's a great question. The hybrid is actually most advantageous in urban driving. You know how New York City cab drivers love their Ford Escape hybrids because they've essentially tripled the mileage over the Ford sedans. The hybrid does best when you do a lot of start-stop driving because it shuts off the gasoline engine and uses the batteries to move around at low speeds, which means that in many cases you can leave the engine off in stop-and-go traffic for a while. Today's hybrids can go most of a mile on electricity. If you're on the highway, on the other hand, the batteries aren't a whole lot of help. The batteries will also support the gasoline engine, but you get your biggest bang for the buck in the urban mileage, and you see that because the increases over a standard vehicle in mileage on the urban part of the EPA cycle is much higher.
So you're saying when you're on the highway, you're pretty much just driving a standard gasoline motored car?
More or less. Now, hybrids tend to have slightly smaller gasoline engines because they're assisted by the batteries, so you do get some advantage from that. And a car like the Prius is also more aerodynamic than your average car. So there are a number of smaller things that add up to better highway mileage, but really the biggest increases are in urban and suburban traffic.
Brad, is that why they're so popular in places like Los Angeles, or would Los Angeles, with all of its freeways, actually not be the best place for a hybrid?
I think they're popular in Los Angeles and throughout California and in major urban centers because of it's almost a cultural dimension as well. I mean, the early adopters have tended to be in cities that where people are looking for change and they're more willing to invest into new technologies. And it's just captured the imagination of people that also are concerned about the environment. So there's not a one-to-one correspondence with, like any purchase decision, really, and especially for cars, there's not a one-to-one correspondence between the exact amount you save or the exact benefit in terms of fuel efficiency compared to to the desire for people to experiment with a new kind of car.
Are they popular overseas as well? I haven't seen any Volvo hybrids.
Not nearly as popular overseas. In Europe, the fuel efficiency strategy seems to be diesel, which is not really hit the U.S. yet. In Europe, it's about 50% diesel, which is a more efficient fuel and drivetrain.
But diesel fuel is more expensive.
Diesel fuel is more expensive. There are huge questions, even though it's some industry forecasters say that the diesel will overtake hybrid in percentage of market. There's a huge question, especially regarding the high diesel prices and the perception that diesel is dirty and noisy and loud.
And is that true?
You
go ahead.
Add into that, diesel is actually much cheaper throughout Europe. There was a conscious policy decision made almost 20 years ago to keep diesel fuel tax advantaged, so you get a 20 or 30% lower price per gallon or per liter in that case for diesel. I think if that were not the case, we wouldn't be seeing the 50% of European cars being diesels that Brad referred to.
John, you mentioned that New York cab drivers love their Ford Escape hybrids, but the Toyota Prius has become synonymous with the hybrid car. Is it better than the Ford Escape and some of the other models?
There are two different approaches, really. Technically, they're very similar, and in fact, the Ford system has some intellectual property from Toyota in it. Not clear how much, but the Ford Escape hybrid is essentially an existing vehicle with hybrid technology underneath. Unless you read the badges, you don't actually know that that vehicle's a hybrid. The Prius, as you pointed out, is synonymous, and even people who aren't car people, at 100 paces, they can point to the Prius, they know what a Prius is, and they say, that's a hybrid. So in a place like L.A., sort of expanding on Brad's point, it's a statement about your intentions and your views on the environment, as well as a much more economical vehicle. And thus far, no American manufacturer has in production a hybrid that looks completely different and distinctive.
So it's really a modeling thing in this case rather than an efficiency thing.
Exactly.
Well, I would add that the proof is in the pudding, and that is MPG, that one of the biggest and actually simplest strategies that people can use to improve their fuel efficiency is buying a smaller vehicle. The Ford Escape Hybrid is a smaller SUV or a crossover SUV, but it's not nearly, at the end of the day, as efficient as a Prius. The Escape, it earns fuel efficiency in the low 30s, while the Toyota Prius is up past the 40 MPG mark.
So when you build a big car, you really aren't saving all that much on miles per gallon. Well, you're saving something, but it's still, we're not talking about great mileage. Hybrid trucks, another example of that. Have hybrid trucks been catching on?
The hybrid trucks out there are quite new. General Motors has only had its hybrid full-size SUVs in the market for a few months, and they've sold thus far very few. It depends which lens you bring to it. From the point of view of the driver or the car owner, they're paying out of their pocket for gasoline. If you look at something like displacing petroleum, cutting carbon emissions, making a large vehicle into a hybrid actually displaces more gasoline than taking a smaller car and making it into a hybrid. But to get back to your earlier point, the laws of physics don't change, and essentially the more mass you have to move around, the more energy it takes. So driving a smaller vehicle and driving it less are always going to be sort of key tactics, and then for those miles that you do drive, adding hybrid on top of that gets you additional gains.
My guests are John Velker, an auto technology journalist, and Brad Berman, editor of HybridCars.com. We're talking about hybrid cars on today's Please Explain. What made, according to some, the Toyota Camry the 2008 hybrid of the year? It's a bigger car than the Prius, and it doesn't look like a hybrid.
Well, my guess would be practicality. You know, even though the Toyota Prius is considered a mid-size sedan, it seats five comfortably, the the Toyota Camry is a little bit bigger and more spacious. So I think that gets to one of the keys to the growth of the hybrid market, and that is really requiring little or no change or sacrifice from the part of the driver. And the Camry is a extremely popular vehicle. I've been in the number one selling passenger vehicle year after year for about a decade. So the idea of offering that with a hybrid option just means that the hybrid market can grow right along with the popularity of those popular cars.
The Prius has recently been in the news because when it's in the electric mode, it provides little warning to pedestrians, especially pedestrians who have seeing problems. How legitimate is this hazard?
It is a legitimate concern for people that rely on some kind of sound coming from the vehicle to know whether it's safe to cross the street. But this is something that we're going to have to deal with. The hybrids are going to grow. We're going to eventually see full battery electric vehicles on the streets that are essentially even more quiet. We're going to have more bicycles on the road. And even though it is a concern, I think a common sense approach, which is just to have hybrid drivers pay close attention when they come to crosswalks and watch out for pedestrians, is about the best thing we can do.
So, John, how do hybrid cars work?
Essentially, in addition to your gasoline motor, you have an electric motor, or in the case of the Prius, you actually have two. And the principle is that sometimes your car uses the gasoline motor to move itself around. Sometimes it uses the electric motor, drawing power from a battery pack that's built into the chassis, and the car decides automatically when it can run electrically and when it has to switch on its engine. But whenever the engine's not being used, it switches it off, so you save fuel that way.
And how are the batteries charged?
The batteries are charged by the engine charging them up as a generator, and by recapturing energy when you brake. It's called regenerative braking. And essentially, when you put on your brakes, you're dissipating energy as heat. Okay, the brake pads grab the disc, they create a lot of heat. That's wasted energy. Instead, that putting on the brakes engages a generator. The wheels actually turn a generator that creates electric power to feed back into the battery.
Do the batteries need to be replaced ever?
Not thus far. We've only had the oldest Priuses in this country for 7 years. And Brad may be able to speak more to this, but thus far, the batteries have lasted, and they actually have to last for 10 years and 150,000 miles under some emissions regulations. So the system in the car, the control software, takes very, very good care of the battery. It keeps it in a very narrow band of operation to maximize its life.
How does the hybrid know when to use the electric versus gas?
That's the brilliance of the system. And in fact, the bulk of the development work in any of these vehicles is the software to make it all work together. The thing about driving a Prius is essentially the engine will switch itself on and off. Sometimes it will run electric. You, as the driver, don't have to do anything differently. It's got an accelerator, a brake, a steering wheel, and it just decides when to recharge, when to use battery power, when to switch the engine on and off. And the software to make all of that work is really the most complex piece of the whole puzzle, and that's where a lot of the development effort has gone.
Brad, because the car produces electromagnetic fields, is there a legitimate scientific concern that hybrids pose a threat to drivers? We've been reading about that recently.
Yeah, not that I've seen. I mean, a very small number of hybrid drivers have felt slightly ill when driving a hybrid and whipped out a meter to test the EMF to see if that could be a cause. But the testing is so random, the standards are so random, and there's just not even close to any kind of conclusive evidence that electromagnetic fields from hybrids are causing any kind of problems. John might be able to answer some of this, but it's highly shielded from the passenger cabin, and my opinion is that we're surrounded by these EMFs. We put cell phones directly to our heads, and And any kind of concern about that is of those problems coming from hybrids, I think, are dwarfed by the onslaught of EMFs that we're receiving every day from all kinds of sources.
Well, there are people who are concerned about putting those cell phones to their heads as well.
Yeah, I mean it's just way too early to tell. I mean there are more than 1 million hybrids on American roads at this point, and there's just simply no evidence beyond some anecdotal reports of any kind of problems from EMFs.
I would concur with that. I've seen no data, and as a consumer product, the hybrid vehicle does have to comply with sort of the same standards on electromagnetic radiation and emissions. But if data does show up that indicates either sort of indirectly or clearly that there is a risk, then I think people will definitely pay attention.
We have to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll be taking listener calls. My guests on today's Please Explain are John Velker, who's an auto technology journalist, and Brad Berman, who's editor of HybridCars.com. My guests are two experts on hybrid cars because we're talking about hybrid cars on Please Explain today. Brad Berman is editor of HybridCars.com. John Velker is an auto technology journalist. And let me give you another phone number, 212-433-9692. That's the number to call if you want to talk to these gentlemen and ask your questions about hybrid cars, 212-433-9692. Before we get to the callers, I wonder why electric cars aren't really our topic of discussion today. Why aren't there electric cars on the market? Didn't General Motors put out a pretty successful one some years ago, only to recall them all?
Actually, remember the laws of physics we were talking about? Until very recently, the batteries have not been there to make fully electric cars practical, especially for Americans' longer usages. The EV1 that you referred to was a very advanced two-seater, but it used lead-acid batteries, essentially the same ones that start your car, the 12-volt battery under the hood, and they would only take it about 70 miles, and it could take as long as 12 hours to recharge. Turns out that although most Americans drive a lot less than 70 miles a day, there's something called range anxiety, the notion that, in fact, if you suddenly had to go and get your kid from school in the middle of the day or something like that, you want to know that your car has a lot more range than that. And the problem with electric cars is you can't go down the road if you run out of juice and get 5 gallons of electricity and pour it into the car. It doesn't work that way. So,
well, aren't hybrid electric plug-in vehicles being developed?
Yes, that's what I was going to add to what John was saying, that the next evolution towards a full battery electric vehicle is what's known as a plug-in hybrid. So the current hybrids rely for the majority on gasoline versus the electric side of the equation. The next generation of hybrids, which are due out probably 2011, 2012, we're not exactly sure what the date is because the technology is being worked out and the advances in batteries still have to catch up. But when they do arrive, that ratio will be flipped where they primarily rely on electricity rather than gasoline. That means that for the majority of our daily driving, which most people drive for, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 miles max, unless they have really long commutes, they will not have to use gasoline or use very little of it.
And will hybrid cars be converted to plug-in? Would that be possible?
That's not possible. People are actually converting. I correct myself there. People are converting regular hybrids into plug-in hybrids, but it requires a hack. Essentially, there are a small but growing number of companies that will do that hack for you and dramatically increase the amount of batteries that are in your hybrids, but it's at this point quite expensive. It might add $10,000 or more to the cost of the car, and these solutions have not been approved by the manufacturer, so you're essentially voiding your warranty on the vehicle.
Just one more thing before we get to the calls. Have there been studies to determine if hybrids have been making any kind of dent on greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, I did see a study that was done by one of the renewable energy, the DOE's renewable energy labs, which shows that it's a little depressing, but that over 7 years of market growth of hybrids, that they the amount of gasoline that's been saved would equate to about less than 1 day of our usage. That's over 7 years of growth. Now, the first couple of years, we didn't have very many hybrids added to the road, so that's going to increase. The reason I mentioned fuel usage is that there's a one-to-one correspondence between the amount of gasoline that we burn and the greenhouse gases that are produced in the atmosphere, and that's 1 gallon of gasoline to 19 pounds of greenhouse gases. So if anyone out there is really concerned about the greenhouse gas impact of their driving, the best thing they can do is buy a car that has greater fuel efficiency.
And you'll really get your biggest advances in gasoline displacement and greenhouse gas reduction from plug-in hybrids, because about two-thirds of Americans drive less than 40 miles a day, and that's kind of the target in the long run for the electric range of a plug-in hybrid. The goal is to make a vehicle that'll do 40 miles every day purely on batteries, and under almost all the scenarios, you are putting less carbon into the air by fueling your car on electricity than you are on gasoline or diesel. And there's one additional.
And I want to add one point about plug-in hybrids is that they essentially solve the problem of range, because after the battery energy is depleted, the car basically becomes like all other hybrids. So you can still go down the road as far as you want to go and fill up at the gas station without having to worry about a long recharging event.
On the other hand, we're still adding to the carbon footprint because we're using electricity that is generally generated by coal-fired plants.
That's
yes,
correct. I mean, it basically
most of the studies
be...
and projections.
Wait, well, one at a time.
Sorry.
John.
Yeah. Most of the studies and projections that look at the national grid and how the national grid's going to improve over time indicate that using electricity to fuel cars is better carbon-wise. Now, if all of the electricity to fuel them came from the dirtiest plants, you have a slight net loss. But in California, for instance, which has a much cleaner grid, with a lot of renewables, a lot of natural gas, you get significant advantages from the get-go.
And Brad, do you want to add to that, or should I go to
the
first call?
I mean, that's basically the same thing. What we're doing is we're shifting the emissions equation from the tailpipe to the smokestack, and the wisdom of that is that it's we centralize the problem so that as opposed to having to retrofit or worry about hundreds of millions of cars out there on the roads, if we can clean up the grid and make that greener, then we will essentially be solving the problem of vehicle emissions at the same time.
And there's one final thing that all consumers will like. It comes down to, it's about 14 cents a mile in gasoline right now, depending on your mileage. It's about 2 cents a mile of electricity to run electrically that same distance. And that's a very, very appealing sales pitch.
Sherry from Cedarhurst, New York. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I've had my Prius since April of last year, and I adore it. One of the things, actually, that wasn't mentioned that it does is for older drivers like myself, the dashboard is much farther away, and I can see it much better with my changing vision. That's one of the things that people don't talk about much. The only problem I've had with my Prius is that when something went wrong, I drained my battery once inadvertently by leaving a map light on while I was on vacation. Toyota was not willing to help AAA figure out how to charge this battery up. They kept insisting it needed to be towed back to the Toyota dealership. Nobody knows Toyota. Nobody knows the Prius but us was their basic message. And AAA kept sending out different people to try to do it. And finally somebody did, but only after I said to the Toyota people, I'm going to call the head of Toyota and see if he would agree that nobody can serve my Toyota Prius but you guys. And I think that there needs to be more help out in the community to know how to deal with problems that the Prius may come up with in service over time.
Any thoughts?
I think it's just a matter of time before everyone gets a little bit more familiar with these hybrids. It really requires just looking at the manual. I've looked at it recently, in fact, to check to see how to restart, you know, to give your car a jump start. And it's fairly clear, but, you know, it requires just a little bit of a shift. And at this point, I know there are workshops happening all across the country to try to train independent technicians to service hybrids. So it's just a matter of time before everyone gets a little more familiar.
Franz from New York City. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, love your show. Question, why is it that we're not going to diesel hybrids? Because they obviously combine the low gas mileage of the diesel with the possibilities of a hybrid. And diesel engines could very easily convert over to biodiesel, which would really even bring down the greenhouse gases that we spew out. So we basically cover all our dependency issues that way. Why is there no strong push for that kind of an engine?
Good question. There's a couple of issues. First, diesel engines are about 15% more expensive than a gasoline engine of the same power. And obviously, the hybrid equipment, the battery and the electric motors, also adds cost. So a diesel hybrid is going to be a little bit more expensive than a gasoline hybrid. Also, traditionally, the Japanese and the Americans do not have experience in smaller diesel engines as the Europeans do. But in Europe, the smaller diesel engines are now relatively so efficient that you don't save as much money by hybridizing them as you do a larger vehicle. I think over time there will be diesel hybrids, but we're still, despite the fact that there have been hybrid cars for 10 years, we're still, I think Brad would agree, in very early days yet.
Six.
It's just too expensive to have those both systems cost added on to each other.
Elizabeth, hi, you're on the air. Elizabeth from Katona, New York.
Hi. I have been driving a Prius for about a year now, and I have a question about the miles per gallon. I understand that it's supposed to be better in the city than on the highway, but I actually find that having to idle at a red light, for instance, will really bring down my mileage. Do you have any idea why that would be?
I've been driving hybrids for 5 years. I have both a Honda Civic Hybrid and a Toyota Prius. I find that I get better mileage on the highway just like you. Even though it's rated from the EPA higher for city rather than highway, just the smooth acceleration, and especially if you don't go too much faster than the speed limit, if at all, I find produces the best mileage. It varies greatly depending on the drive cycle or the environment that you're driving in. If you have a lot of start and stop versus keeping it at, you know, some people consider city driving to be 25 miles per hour straight without stopping for miles. That's ideal. But most of the time in urban driving, it's a lot of stop and start, and it just greatly depends on where you're driving and how you're driving.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that you're getting better mileage on the highway, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main point is, what is the cumulative combined mileage? And from every evidence that I've seen, both personally and through hybridcars.com, people are getting, with a Toyota Prius or a Honda Civic Hybrid, in the low 40s, which is, you just can't be beat by any other vehicle out there.
A listener has left a comment on our show page asking, in fact, a number have, asking what the carbon footprint is in the construction of hybrids versus the regular gasoline cars.
That's an interesting question. I haven't seen any good studies. Certainly, the nickel metal hydride batteries that are used in today's hybrids do require things like nickel mining, which add carbon load that wouldn't otherwise be in a regular vehicle. But I haven't seen any good studies. There is one study out there. It's called the Hummer Prius study or something like that, and it purports to show that actually a Hummer is far more environmentally friendly than a Prius. If you dig into it, it's based on some very, very shaky assumptions, and it's been fairly widely critiqued. But I think it's a good question, and over time there will be more studies on that issue.
Well, it seems to me that a Prius may not be the prettiest car in the world, but it's a lot nicer looking than a Hummer. A Hummer is sending out a really awful message, forgetting about all those other things. Jerry from Fairlawn, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you very much. My wife and I were looking for a 2008 Camry hybrid. And what we found was that one of the major benefits of the Camry, namely its trunk size, was shrunk by 50% because of the placement of the batteries. So are there similar size cars to the Camry where you don't lose that percentage of trunk space?
Do they all just take up that trunk space with the battery? Gentlemen?
I don't know the exact percentage of the battery space, of the trunk space is taken up by the battery. With the Prius, you don't even feel the difference. It's actually quite spacious with the hatchback. It's a matter of the engineers figuring out the best placement of these batteries to not compromise storage space. I will say that the next generation of battery technology, namely lithium ion, will allow a lot more energy to be stored and produce a lot more power with a lot less space. And that's not in today's hybrids, but it's projected to come in the next couple of years. And by the time we reach the lithium ion age, we will definitely reduce the size of the batteries, and I think there will be little or no compromise at all in terms of storage.
A listener may also want to look at a Nissan Altima hybrid. Although 80% of the hybrids in the world today are from Toyota, there are a number of other manufacturers making them. So a comparable sedan would be the Altima hybrid. And then I believe for 2009, Ford will be selling a Ford Fusion hybrid as well.
So the American car makers are finally picking up on it. They could have beaten the Japanese, couldn't they? Or is this really something that Toyota got a head start on?
Oh, I think they definitely could have beat them. There was a Clinton administration program called the Partnership for a New Generation of Vehicles, PNGV, which invested $1 billion into trying to produce a vehicle that got better than 80 mpg. And all three of the final designs were hybrids. That was in the 90s. In fact, the announcement of PNGV created some ripples at Toyota, and they decided that they were going to compete right along with the Americans. And lo and behold, by 97, they had a Prius out on the Japanese market while the Americans were caught flat-footed.
A listener left a comment on our show page asking if the stated miles per gallon on hybrids windows in the showrooms truly represent the real miles per gallon. I guess that question could apply to all cars.
I think that the answer to that really, as Brad said earlier, depends on how you drive. Are you an aggressive driver, or do you really baby it? And what we call the duty cycles. Is it urban? Is it suburban? Now, the mileage figures for all cars before last year were considered to be pretty unrealistic. The EPA actually creates those figures using tests that were designed in about 1970. Before cars had air conditioning, before we had so much suburbanization, before cars had the very fast acceleration they do today. So increasingly the cycles that they were using were unrealistic. They adjusted those figures, and hybrids actually took a fairly big hit on the mileage on the window stickers. Their actual mileage in real use didn't change, but the window stickers moved closer to reality. I would say the sort of ultimate Prius drivers, the ones who compete on mileage, who drive very gently, who try to keep the car in electric mode as long as possible, the ones who pay attention to their little display screen, they can get mileage routinely that exceeds what's on the window sticker. On the other hand, if you jackrabbit away from every stoplight, then you may not get mileage that even matches the window sticker. So it really does kind of depend on how you're driving.
We have a call from Francesca from Halifax, Nova Scotia. Hi, Francesca, you're on the air.
Hi, I'd like your guests to talk about two products. One is the Tesla Roadster, and the other is the Honda fuel cell car. The Tesla is a very expensive car, but it sold out in 2006, and there was back orders, and you know, front orders. It's 100% electric. It gets 0 to 60 in 3.9 seconds, and it has a charge up to 220 miles. And the Honda fuel cell car is all based on hydrogen, and it's been put out in certain markets, but it's taking a very long time to get to the rest of North America. It's mainly because I think Honda is just taking its time. I can't find out anything else, but I'd like to hear what they have to say.
And Francesca, are you listening to us online?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
A couple of points. I've actually ridden in a Tesla, and they are, without a doubt, breathtakingly fast and completely silent. Mm-hmm. They are expensive because they make their electric battery out of about 7,000 cell phone batteries, believe it or not, all wired together.
What does expensive mean?
I think it's actually now $109,000 for a two-seat.
They started at $80,000 plus the equipment, I guess, too.
They raised the price recently. So that's essentially an expensive sports car. Tesla has designs to go into the sedan market. That hasn't happened yet. We'll see what happens with that. And right now,
Do they have a patent? I mean, is there a possibility for another car maker to borrow that technology and make a cheaper car?
Tesla has patents on some of its intellectual property. They had been planning to sell batteries, and they have now ended that business. I think right now they're just focusing on getting their production lines up and running. It's not a trivial thing to start a car company. As for the Honda fuel cell vehicle, very nice vehicle. A couple of things. The main problem with hydrogen fuel cell vehicles is, where do you get hydrogen? And there's no incentive for gasoline stations to put in hydrogen until there are enough cars running around to justify the cost. And if there's sort of a chicken and egg problem here.
Honda has in the works something that you can have at your home. It's a home hydrogen station, which they are also planning to put out on the market. The problem with that, in my opinion, is that they're using natural gas to generate hydrogen, which you can do other ways as well.
And the problem with when you crack natural gas to make hydrogen, the byproduct is carbon dioxide. So I don't know how the numbers work out, but in fact, you're putting hydrogen into the car, so all you get out the tailpipe is water. There's no carbon out the tailpipe. But as with electricity for battery electric cars, there's carbon created in the generation of the power, or in this case, in the generation of the hydrogen fuel. So it's a challenging problem. Honda is limiting its FCX Clarity to the fuel cell vehicle you referred to a handful of markets, mostly those highly environmentally concerned markets. Southern California is one of them. But they also are limiting them to places where hydrogen fuel is available so you can actually fuel up your car.
So just in a nutshell, most industry analysts look to full battery electric vehicles like the Tesla Roadster to come out with any kind of volume and a decent price, maybe in the 5 to 10 year time frame. Hydrogen fuel cells could be 20 to 30 years.
I would agree, and it took General Motors 3 years and a couple of million dollars to get one hydrogen fueling station built in White Plains, New York. Multiply that effort by, say, 15,000 hydrogen stations to get even, you know, sparse coverage, you're looking at a huge, huge infrastructural problem, let alone what's the carbon balance of making hydrogen for vehicles in the first place.
We have to leave it there. We thank the two of you for participating in today's Please Explain About Hybrid Cars. John Velker, who's an auto technology journalist, and Brad Berman, editor of hybridcars.com.
Thanks, Leonard.
Thank you.